Hey, good morning. My name is Jeremiah. I'm one of the pastors here at Westbridge. We're thrilled to have you here. Thanks for joining us today. Grab your outline. That'll help you follow along with the talk this morning. I want to say hello to those of you in our parent viewing area as well. Thanks for joining us there. It's a great option if you have small children that you prefer to keep with you during the service. As you're grabbing your outline, let me highlight something here real quick. On your way in, you should have received a catalog that looks like this. And this is our home church catalog. Home churches are groups of people, about 8 to 15 people that meet all over the area in homes or coffee shops or different places and really just talk about life, how to take what we're learning collectively here on Sunday mornings and how do we take that and apply it to our lives in our specific situations. And then they also eat food together and laugh together and just build friendships. And so it's a great way to help grow your faith and build friendships at the same time. And our hope is that everyone will participate on some level in a home church because of the fact that as we grow larger as a church here on Sunday mornings, we want you to always have some people that you feel connected to who are also a part of Westbridge. And so it's a great way to do that. We run them in seasons, and our season kicks off this week. And so if you haven't yet joined one, there's still time. You can jump into one. As a matter of fact, we're in this series wrapping up today on relationships and marriage, and we have one on Thursday nights right here in St. Michael that's specifically for couples. And so I think that's a great option if you are a couple who lives in the area and would say, man, we'd love to meet some other couples from Westbridge. That's an option. There's also a number of other options for people with families, with kids, groups that are open to everyone. And then we also have coming up Financial Peace University. This is a group that if you have would like to learn more about how to pay down debt, how to manage your budget better, how to get healthy when it comes to just your overall financial picture, that's a great sort of 8-week, 9-week course that runs. And that'll meet at our operations center in the Colonial Mall. And we have room for as many people as can sign up for that. And our hope is that if that's an area of your life that you want to improve, this is a great opportunity for you to improve that area and learn some stuff about that. So you can sign up for that. You can sign up for any of these on your connection card, or you can sign up at gg.westbridgechurch.com. You can go right to our website, and the whole catalog is online available for you there as well. Now, we are wrapping up this series today that we've been in for a couple weeks called Relationship Reboot. And we've been talking about how do we reboot some things when it comes to our marriage, our relationships. And week one was all about reboot your connection. How do we get sort of reconnected to each other? And then last week we talked about how to reboot your communication. How do we learn to have healthy habits of communication that help us navigate conflict? And then, today we're going to wrap this up and talk about how to reboot your commitment. So if you missed any of those weeks, I'd encourage you to go back and check it out online. We're going to jump into it today. How many of you, quick show of hands, have ever seen the movie Juno? Lift your hands nice and high. Okay, so many of you have, many of you have not. How many of you who have not are planning on seeing it today? Just curious, hypothetically. Okay, I'm going to ruin that for you. Spoiler alert, okay? By the way, it came out in 2007, so you've had a little time. All right, Juno is a high school girl from Minnesota, actually, who ends up getting pregnant. She's in high school, and she's planning to give the baby up for adoption. And the people that she's giving the baby up to adoption, the people that she's giving her baby to, end up having problems in their marriage. And so she's kind of having a difficult time with the young man who is the father of her baby. And she looks at her parents' relationship, and they're not together anymore. They got divorced when she was younger. And now she's looking at this couple who she's going to give her baby to, and they are separated. And kind of her just belief in humanity is going away. And she's like, I'm kind of losing my belief in humanity. And in a tender moment between her and her dad, they're having this conversation, and she asks this powerful question. She actually says it in a couple of different ways. She says, I guess I wonder sometimes if people ever stay together for good, like people in love. And then they talk a little bit more, and she says it again. She says, Dad, I just need to know that it's possible for two people to stay happy together forever. In other words, I'm looking around, and I'm looking at, you know, I'm having problems with the child of, or the father of my unborn baby. And I'm looking at you and mom, and it didn't work for you guys. And I'm looking at this couple that we were going to give the baby to. It's not working for them. And I'm just wondering, is it even possible? I'm looking around, and I'm wondering, am I shooting for something that nobody even reaches anymore? Should I even set my mind to this task? Is it even possible? And I think it's a powerful question, and it's a question that I think every single one of us wrestles with at some point, because in spite of what you've seen, and in spite of the state of your current marriage, in spite of the state of that you might have experienced in a previous marriage, in spite of what you've seen in your parents' marriage, and in spite of what you've seen in culture and what statistics tell us, there is something in you and there is something in me that says it's possible. And not only that, there's something in you and there's something in me that says it's possible, not just ideologically, but it's actually possible for us. It's possible for us. And yet, how do we get there? How do we reboot our commitment and make, you know, how do we reboot our commitment and do everything that we can to make it to the finish line? Because deep down, we know it's possible for us, and yet the reality is we also know that relationships over time can tend to lose their sizzle, right? You start out and you're dating and everything's going great, and you pull up to pick her up on the first date, and you've actually like showered and you've made a mixtape, and now when you show up at home to pick her up, you just wait in the driveway and honk the horn, you know? At one point, we're singing Marvin Gaye, right? Baby, there ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no valley low enough. Ain't no river wide enough to keep me from getting to you, baby. And then, after a few years of marriage, it's like, hey, can you come in the kitchen? Yeah, what do you need? It's like, ain't no mountain high enough, but I don't want to come upstairs. And I don't know anybody who doesn't want to fall in love. And when you think about love and romance in our era of human history, and particularly in our culture, we have more and more people who are meeting online than ever before. And I'm not knocking online dating. As a matter of fact, I've done a number of weddings where the people who are getting married actually met online. And I'm not talking about, like, you know, Tinder, okay, swipe right, all right? I'm talking about classy online dating sites, like through Craigslist. The reality is, listen to this, we have over 2,500 online dating services in the United States alone. That's unbelievable. It has never been easier to meet someone and to have the potential to fall in love. And yet, I think we'd all agree, it's never been more difficult to stay in love. It's never been more difficult to maintain a lasting and loving marriage relationship. Now, whether you are a follower of Jesus or not, in our culture, there are so many failed marriages, and statistically speaking, we look at this and we see so many people who struggle and have relationship issues. Why is it that we still want that? The majority of people still want a loving and intimate marriage relationship that makes it all the way to the end. And if I'm honest with you, that's what I want, right? I want my wife and I to be that couple in the old folks' home together, heading to the cafeteria to get dinner at 3 p.m. We're holding hands down the hallway. Our hands are probably going to be shaking a little bit, you know, as we take hits off of each other's oxygen tanks. But, man, that's the dream, right? And I think what that is, I think it's a little bit of the image of God in you. And I think it's a little bit of the image of God in me. I think that that's what that is. I think there is something in the intimacy of marriage that reminds us of the intimate relationship that God wants to have with each and every one of us. And so we long for that. This is the whole idea behind the concept of marriage. We were created in the image of God. In other words, that's to say that we bear in our DNA the image, the DNA of a God who is pursuing relationship with us. And we are created to exist in relationship with God and with one another. Marriage is meant to be this environment where we experience the kind of deep intimacy with another person that God is seeking and pursuing with us. So the question we want to wrestle with today is, how? If that's what we want, if that's what we're going after, how do we do that? How do we reboot that commitment? Is there anything that we can do on a day-to-day basis to set ourselves up for a lasting, committed relationship? And so I think there are some things that we can do that are practical, not always easy, but practical and helpful. And so today we're going to give you 4 habits to reboot your commitment. Here's 1. Acknowledge that your marriage is a covenant and not a contract. Acknowledge that your marriage is a covenant and not a contract. If you remember back to your wedding day, there were parts of that big day that were absolutely optional and non-essential. And then there were parts of that day that were completely necessary and critical. One of the optional parts of your wedding was all of the expensive clothing. All of the expensive clothes. I've done weddings where I wore a full suit and tie, and I've done weddings where I wore shorts and flip-flops and a t-shirt. And the reality is, it's all optional. The clothing is optional. The wedding dress that you paid a lot of money for, optional. The bridesmaids' dresses that I'm sure they were able to wear to many other events, optional. Right, the tux that the groom wore, optional. That was all optional. Everything was optional. Because let's be honest, nobody ever looks at the groom anyways, right? Nobody has ever like, oh, the groom looks so radiant today. As a matter of fact, I've been to some weddings where it seemed like the groom was optional, you know? But the reality is this. When you think about it, the music, the ring bearer, the candles, the flowers, the guest book, the ushers, it's all optional. But there is one thing that happens at weddings that is not optional, and that's the vows. That's the whole reason that you're there. That's the whole reason that you came, is to make a promise to another person, to look them in the eye, and to commit yourself and devote yourself to them completely. At some point, you have to make a promise. That's what marriage is. It's a different type of relationship than any other relationship in your life. And yet, in our culture, we tend to view marriage as a contract. It's how our culture looks at marriage. It's how our culture tends to live out marriage. But Scripture says marriage is really a covenant. Now, covenant is not really a word that you and I use on a regular basis. It's a word that is a mega theme in the Bible, however. When writing about marriage in the Bible, the authors often refer to a covenant. They never talk about a contract. Well, what's the difference? A contract is a legal transaction. It's based on both parties getting something from the other. And it's based on legality. It says, you do your part and I'll do my part, right? And if we both keep that up, then the contract is binding. A covenant isn't a legal contract. It's not a legal agreement. A covenant is a relational agreement. And it's based on both parties giving something to the other. It's not about what I can get from you. It's about what I can give to you. It's saying, I am giving myself to you. A contract is based on what you're going to receive. A covenant is based on what you're going to give. Another difference is this. A contract is conditional. It's predicated on mistrust. The idea with a contract is, if you break your side of the contract, then that makes this contract null and void, and now I am entitled to, you know, whatever we agree to if the contract gets broken. And now I get to have my way. But a covenant is unconditional and it's predicated on trust. It's not out to protect its own interests. It's saying, this is, I'm pledging myself to you out of trust and trustworthiness. A contract is based on compromise. If you do your part, then I'll do my part. It's a 50-50 agreement. You keep up your end of the deal, and when you keep up your end of the deal, I'll keep up my end of the deal, and vice versa. A covenant is based on sacrifice. I will give you 100% of me without expecting anything in return. See, that's a huge difference. A contract is temporary. When the obligation is met, the agreement ends. But a covenant is permanent. There is no revocation. There is no taking it back. It's a forever promise. Buying a car is a contract. Buying a car does not fundamentally change who you are, unless it's a minivan. But buying a car ultimately doesn't change you at the core of who you are. But a covenant changes you, right? Marriage will fundamentally change you. It changes who you are at the core because you are no longer me and I. Now you're us and we. It changes you. Matthew 9, Jesus actually had this to say about marriage. He says, haven't you read the scriptures? They record that from the beginning, God made them male and female. This explains why a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. And since they are no longer two, but one, let no one split apart what God has joined together. You may or may not be a follower of Jesus. You might be here just exploring what that means. But I want you to know, when God looks at marriage, God views marriage as a covenant relationship. You give 100% of yourself as a forever promise. So here's my challenge to you under this habit. How do you view your marriage? Is it a contract? Is it 50-50? As long as you do your part, I'll do mine. Or is it 100% giving myself to you out of trust and trustworthiness? Is it 100%? Or is it, you know, I'll keep up my end of the deal when you keep up your end of the deal. And if you don't, then I won't. And you kind of hold them hostage with that. Is that the tone of your marriage? Is it possible that you're experiencing some tension and some difficulty in your marriage relationship because of the fact that you've tended to view it as a contract instead of a covenant? Is it possible that you have a set of expectations that you're waiting for them to meet, and when they do their part, then I'll do mine, but not a second before? And maybe you don't even say it like that, you know, consciously, but the reality is there's an underlying tone to your relationship where it's 50-50 and we're going to meet in the middle and that's how this thing's going to go. And I'm just telling you, agree or disagree, the reality is that is setting your relationship up for some real disappointment and discouragement. And the reality is this: it breeds insecurity into your relationship. And so how do you view marriage? Now, I want you to hear my heart behind this, because what I'm not saying is you should stay in a terrible marriage where there's abuse and adultery and abandonment. But the question you got to ask yourself is, how do I treat my marriage relationship? Am I treating it like a contract, or am I treating it like a covenant? I've seen God do incredible things when two people decide to trust God and walk the path of forgiveness and restoration. But the question is, how am I going to view my marriage moving forward? Now, I'll tell you, this is very contrary to the way that our culture tends to think. But I think that we would agree that just because culture thinks one way, it doesn't mean it's necessarily the right way, and it also doesn't mean it's necessarily the most effective way. Many years after Jesus walked on the earth, his brother James actually became a leader of the church in Jerusalem. And while he was essentially the pastor of this church in Jerusalem, he wrote some instruction to help those who were in his region learn what it means to follow Jesus. And one of the things that he wrote was about wisdom and humility. Listen to what he writes in James 3. He says, "If you are wise and understand God's ways, prove it by living an honorable life, doing good works with the humility that comes from wisdom." Wisdom is essentially taking a course of action based on where you want to be in the future. It's connecting the dots between the choices I make today and where I want to end up. And it's saying, okay, here's my preferred future. Here's what I want that to look like. Now, here's the steps it's going to take to get me there. And so I need to start making choices today that lead me to that preferred future. In its basic definition, that's what wisdom is. It's making choices today that lead us to our preferred future. Now, you have to have humility if you're ever going to gain wisdom. Whenever you meet someone who lacks humility, you've met someone who lacks wisdom. See, the only way to gain wisdom is to be open to new things and to acknowledge that maybe you don't know everything just yet. And so James says, there is a humility that comes from wisdom, and vice versa. And he continues, if you are bitterly jealous and there is selfish ambition in your heart, don't cover up the truth with boasting and lying, for jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. For some of you, that might describe your marriage. It's filled with disorder. It's filled with chaos. And the reason is there's selfish ambition and jealousy. Selfish ambition, I'm trying to meet this person 50-50. I'm trying to meet them in the middle. You've got to meet me halfway. You've got to meet my expectations, and then I'll meet your expectations. That is a selfish ambition that leads to disorder and chaos. And some of you are experiencing this very thing that James is talking about. Your selfish ambition gets the best of you, and instead of submitting, loving, serving, you power up, you criticize, you get defensive, because you deserve to get your way, because after all, they got their way last time. And it's this 50-50, meet in the middle. My needs have to be met in order for your needs to get met. And James isn't speaking specifically about marriage, but it certainly applies, doesn't it? He continues with this: the wisdom from above is first of all pure. It's also peace-loving, gentle at all times, and willing to yield to others. It is full of mercy and the fruit of good deeds. It shows no favoritism and is always sincere. If you're going to experience the peace that comes from God's ways, then it starts with humility and saying, okay, maybe God's idea of marriage is the most effective way to do marriage. And maybe instead of viewing this thing 50-50 and treating this like a contract, we need to, from today forward, start looking at this as a covenant. And maybe it's something that you need to even decide on yourself. Okay, from now on, I am just going to give 100 of myself, 100% of myself to my spouse, no questions asked. How would that change your marriage relationship? So acknowledge your marriage is a covenant, not a contract. Here's number two. Always believe the best about your spouse. In any relationship, and particularly in marriage, there's going to be a gap from time to time between expectations and behavior. That's just the reality. Your expectation that you have, you bring expectations with you into this relationship. And even if there are expectations that you agree to as a married couple, you go, yeah, that's the expectation that's set. Every once in a while, from time to time, daily, weekly, monthly, there's going to be situations where the behavior doesn't meet the expectation, and there's a gap. See, your expectation was that he would be home at this time, but he didn't show up until later, and now there's a gap between what you expected and behavior. Your expectation was she would send that bill off. She said she was going to, and it didn't get done, and now it's late. And so now the behavior and the expectation, there's a gap. Your expectation was that he would hang his towel when it was wet. And that doesn't happen. Behavior, there's a gap between behavior and expectation. Your expectation was that she would make spaghetti in this way, like your mom did. And that's not happening. Behavior, expectation. Now, these are pretty minimal. But the reality is there will always be a gap between expectations and behavior. And what determines the strength and the health of marriages is what you put in the gap, is what you decide you're going to put in the gap. And you have two choices. You can either put in the gap, I believe the best about them, or you can put in the gap, I assume the worst about them. Those are your options. Because when there's a gap between expectations and reality, between expectations and behavior, we will write a story about why that expectation wasn't met. And the story that you write about your spouse can either be to believe the best about them or to assume the worst. Paul says, the Apostle Paul writes, that we should always assume the best. In Ephesians 4, he says, always be humble and gentle. Be patient with each other, making allowance for each other's faults because of your love. You make allowance for each other's faults. Great marriages, healthy marriages, have determined to believe the best about their spouse, and they are generous with that belief. When I don't show up at the time that I said I would, my wife has two choices. Well, I know that he's busy, and he works so hard, and he does so much for our family, and I know that he has a good reason for being late. That's option number one. Option number two, I knew it, late again, this SOB never keeps his word. That's option number two. And you can, when there's a difference between expectations and behavior, you can either believe the best or you can assume the worst. When she doesn't follow through with something that she told me she was going to do, and something we agreed to, I have two choices. Man, she is such a great mom. And she works so hard, and she's so kind and loving and compassionate, and it's okay that that didn't get done. I know that we're going to get to it. I know that it was a crazy day today with four kids and trying to get everything done. Or I can say this, I cannot believe this. Why is she so lazy? Unbelievable. Why can't she just get anything done like she says she's going to? What you put in the gap makes all the difference. What you put in the gap between expectations and behavior makes all the difference. And if you want to build a healthy foundation of friendship in your marriage, then you have to determine, I'm going to put optimism in the gap. I'm going to believe the best about them. What if in your marriage relationship, what if you simply chose, every time there's a gap, you're going to believe the best about your spouse? Every single time that their behavior does not match up with your expectation, you're just going to believe the best about them. How would that exercise alone change the climate of your marriage? Again, the Apostle Paul writes in Philippians 4, fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Fix your thoughts, he says. This is what you should be fixated on. Fix your thoughts on what is true and honorable and right and pure and lovely and admirable. Think about things that are excellent and worthy of praise. What if we started to apply that to our marriage relationship? Believe it or not, your spouse does not wake up every single morning thinking, how can I make them miserable today? How can I disappoint them in some way? I don't care who you are. No one enjoys disappointing someone that they care about. No one takes pleasure, no one takes delight in frustrating and disappointing someone that they care about, no matter who you are. What if every day we looked at our spouse and we fixed our thoughts, not on who they're not, but what if we fixed our thoughts on who they are? And we just chose to look at the good, we chose to believe the best about them. What if we began to assume the best about their intentions in every situation? How do you think that would affect our daily interactions? Because if you don't do that, the alternative is to try to extract from this person everything you expect them to be, and you will constantly focus on where they're falling short of your expectations instead of being thankful for who they are. Which is why this very wise author of the book of Proverbs wrote this verse, Proverbs 21, it's not on your outline. He said this, it's better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a quarrelsome wife in a lovely home. That's great wisdom. He said, I would rather live in peace in a small corner of the attic than have a grand home and constantly be at each other's throats. If you want to build a marriage that lasts, you've got to determine to believe the best about your spouse. Here's number three. Establish rituals to connect through the changing seasons. This is huge because in every relationship, there are seasons. There are seasons. And this year in our family, we have a freshman in high school. Now, I know you're kind of like doing the math right now in your head and you're going like, man, you look way too young to have a freshman in high school. Thank you. I know, right? We have a freshman in high school, we have a daughter who is entering middle school, we have a son in fourth grade, and we have a three-year-old gremlin who terrorizes the rest of us. A lot has changed for us in 18 years. We've been married for over 18 years, and we were 16 years old when we met. We were 19 years old when we got married. We were both followers of Jesus at 19, and when you fall in love and you're young and you're doing your best to follow Jesus, you get married young. All right? So I'll just hang that out there. In marriage, Dr. John Gottman, who's a marriage psychologist, wrote this. In marriage, people often change and forget to tell each other. Maybe that you've experienced that in your own marriage. And the reality is there are seasons in marriage. And the temptation for us is to buy into this notion that if we're facing a difficult season now, it's never going to change. And we are too quick to pull the trigger and try to back out on... Man, the reality is there's seasons. And sometimes in marriage, there's difficult seasons. But there's a reason that it's a season. Every winter in Minnesota, we face the same situation. Every winter, for as long as I've known my wife, since we were 16 years old, for 21 years, we've had the same conversation. She'll look at me in the dead of winter, let out a big sigh, and say, why do we still live here? It's because it's a season. But even she cannot deny that summer keeps coming back like an old friend ready to pick up right where they left off. There have been seasons for us in 18 plus years of marriage where it's felt like winter, where things felt cold and icy and dead, where it's like, man, we can't seem to get on the same page and it feels like we're out of sync and what is going on with us? Or just, man, life has just thrown so much at us. That it's been, we feel disconnected, we feel distant, we feel pulled apart from each other, but you have to fight to stay connected through those seasons. You have to establish rituals that help you connect during those seasons. Because here's the reality, healthy marriages don't try to make time for one another. Healthy marriages make time for one another. They don't try to find time for one another, they make it a priority. They decide we're going to stay connected. No matter what the seasons throw at us. As a matter of fact, this week we'll put it out on our weekly update. We have on our website a link that we actually purchased 20 date ideas. And if you're like, man, what's a great way for us to connect? And you're not sure what to do, and you wanna change it up a little bit. Maybe you just have a routine, or maybe you haven't gotten on a date in a long time and you need to reconnect. We have 20 date ideas that you can just download, and it gives you instructions, and it gives you icebreakers, things to talk about. You know, I mean, we have given it all to you for free. And so you can go to a page on our website. We'll put it out there this week. We'll put it on our Facebook, and we'll email it out this week. And you can download any of these dates. And you say, well, what if we can't get a sitter? There's a whole set of them that are do-at-home date ideas for after the kids go to bed. Put the kids to bed, have a date right there. But you got to figure out ways to connect with each other, especially as seasons change. This last, just a few months ago, my wife and I, over the years, we've collected gift cards. People give you a gift card for Christmas or a birthday or whatever, a thank you card, and has a gift card in it. And so we've taken those gift cards, and we just usually would set the gift cards inside of a drawer. And after years and years of that, we realized we had a stack of gift cards over the last few years. And so one night this last summer, we said, man, let's just grab these gift cards, and let's hit as many of these places as we can in one night. And the rule is, if we didn't know how much money was on them or anything, if there's no money on a gift card, if it's a used one, then we don't eat at that place, we don't shop at that place, we're not spending a dime of our own money tonight. We're just going to go and use all these. And so we hit 10 different places in one night. It was awesome, super fun. We went to 3 different coffee shops, went to Chipotle, we had a gift card for Chipotle, we had a gift card for the movie theater here in St. Michael, we had a gift card from like 7 years ago to Becker Furniture World. Like, let's go to Becker Furniture World. There were a couple places we went, and they scanned the card, and there's like, I'm sorry, there's nothing on this card. And we're like, see ya. That's the rule. And so it was so much fun, and we were going bouncing all over the place to all these different things, and we just had a blast. And it's one of those things we look back at, just the two of us, and we just laugh about. It's one of those fun nights. What do you have that's a ritual for you that helps you connect? When's the last time you just laughed together and goofed off together? You got married because ultimately you wanted to spend your life with your best friend. But if you don't work at staying connected and cultivating the friendship, then what's going to happen is that you are going to end up being business partners running a free bed and breakfast. That is not what you want. Healthy relationships are light relationships. Meaning the atmosphere in the relationship is not heavy and serious all the time. That's the doom of any relationship. If the relationship never has any breaks of fun and laughter, then it's not sustainable. And when you establish rituals that prioritize together time, then you don't have to spend all of your free time working on the business side of marriage. And there is a business side to marriage. You got to pay the bills. You have to take kids places, and you have to parent, and there's the business side of things. But you also need to have times where you just reconnect and have fun together. Those moments can become release valves in your marriage. Proverbs 17, it says, a cheerful heart is good medicine, but a broken spirit saps a person's strength. How's the humor in your marriage? Can you remember the last time that you laughed out loud at something together? Can you remember the last time that your spouse looked at you through tears flowing down their eyes, going, I can't breathe, I'm laughing so hard, stop. Can you remember the last time one of you laughed so hard that you shot milk out of your nose? If not, then you need to be intentional about planning some fun into your life and marriage. Proverbs 15 says, a glad heart makes a happy face. For the happy heart, life is a continual feast. There are seasons. Some seasons are great. Some seasons are difficult. During the difficult seasons, don't buy into the notion that this is never going to end. I'm stuck like this forever. You got to work to stay connected through those difficult seasons. One great ritual is to always kiss your spouse every time that one of you leaves and every time that one of you comes home. It builds anticipation for each other's arrival and helps you stay connected. Song of Solomon chapter 1 says this, kiss me and kiss me again, for your love is sweeter than wine. My wife has that verse memorized. This is honestly something that my wife and I have done since we were married. But to be honest with you, there's times where in the hustle and bustle, we'll find each other and give each other a kiss when one of us gets home, when one of us leaves, no matter where we are in the house. But the reality is that in the busyness of life, sometimes it becomes routine. And so it's like, hey, I love you. I'm heading out the door. I'll see you later. And it's just a quick kiss. And that's why I was so pleased to read what Dr. John Gottman had to say about this. Because he wrote, when you are parting, make the kiss last at least 6 seconds. I was like, that's what I'm talking about. So this is part of your homework this week. If you're here at Westbridge Church, I'm going to issue the 6-second kiss challenge. So here's the deal. Each morning when you leave, each evening when you come home, all week, embrace each other and kiss for at least 6 seconds. Now, the point is this. 6 seconds is long enough to get you to slow down and to just share a moment of connection. That's the whole point. So it's not a make-out session, okay? Ladies, no stopwatches, like, ding, 6 seconds, you know? And guys, no trying around second base, okay? All right. It's a point of connection. It's a point of connection. But you need rituals that help you connect regularly to get through difficult seasons. Here's number 4. Make faith in Jesus the common goal of your marriage. As we continue to grow and become the people God's created us to be, as we continue to change over time, it is amazing how often it can highlight just how different we really are from each other. In the midst of our many differences, we need a common focus that's a lot bigger than, hey, we like some of the same stuff, or we both enjoyed sports, or we dated in high school. Couples who make it across the finish line have much less to do with how compatible they are with one another and a lot more to do with something bigger than themselves that's holding them together. And here's the reality. Whatever you believe about God, regardless of what you believe about God, whatever your belief system is, it is going to bleed its way into every aspect of your life. That's just the reality. And so we have to at least acknowledge if we're not pursuing a relationship with God to the same degree as our spouse, that has the potential, we at least have to acknowledge that that has the potential to create some tension in our marriage relationship. And if one spouse says, man, I'm doing everything I can to pursue and follow Jesus, that's going to affect how they view parenting, how they view their career, how they interact with people, how they spend their money and their financial resources. It's going to bleed its way down into every aspect of their life. And if both spouses are not somewhat on the same page or have an understanding of that, then what's going to happen is it is going to cause a lot of tension in your relationship. Because whatever you believe about God, and you don't have to believe what we believe, and we say this all the time, you don't have to believe in order to belong here. We created Westbridge as a place where you could come and explore and figure out what you believe. But I think it's wisdom to at least acknowledge, if we both believe different things, whatever that belief system is, it's going to bleed its way into how we live our lives. And if we're not on the same page, it's going to create some tension. In Ephesians 5, Paul says this, marriage is a great mystery, but it is an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. Ultimately, marriage was created by God for us to experience on a day-to-day basis the type of intimacy that God desires for us to experience with him. The kind of love where we're fully known and yet fully loved. This relationship with our spouse is one where I say, I know the ugliest parts of you. I know you on your worst day and in your worst season, and I still love you, and I'm still committed to you, and I'm still giving 100% of myself to you. This is the relationship where this person says to me, I know you at your ugliest. I know you at your worst. I know you in your worst seasons. I've seen you lose your temper. I've smelled that breath in the morning. But I love you. I'm giving 100% of myself to you anyways. And when you're both, when two people are giving 100% of themselves to each other, and they're both pursuing a relationship with God, it naturally makes the relationship with each other stronger. Think about it like a triangle. With God here and husband and wife here. And when both husband and wife are doing everything they can to move closer to God, to follow Jesus, they naturally are moving closer to one another. As a matter of fact, Solomon actually echoes this idea in Ecclesiastes chapter 4. He says, two people are better off than one. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. Is there a constant underlying tension in your marriage because you're pulling in different directions spiritually? Over and over again, God invites us to move in his direction. Move in his direction. And he promises that when we do that, he's already moving in ours. In James chapter 4, it says, come close to God, and God will come close to you. Is it possible that making the decision to pursue a relationship with God could potentially be the best possible thing for your marriage? And maybe you never even thought about it that way, but is it actually conceivable that when you and your spouse both make a determination to say, okay, we're going to do everything we can to move in God's direction, is it possible that that might be the single most significant factor in having a healthy marriage? If that's where you're at today, I want to invite you to take one step in God's direction. See, the scriptures tell us that we were created by God and for God to exist in loving community with God and with one another. And yet all of us, from the first human beings to every one of us today, at some point we walked away from God. But that's why I love the songs that we sang today. Your love will never stop chasing after me. Your heart won't stop coming after me. It's like an avalanche of grace. Like, you just keep coming, God, and I walked away from you. I went over here, and you just came after me, and so I went over here, and you came after me. And you never stop pursuing me. And even when I keep walking away from you, you don't force yourself on me, but you never turn your back on me. And every time that I seem to walk away from you, you keep walking in my direction. And you just keep saying, hey, I'm here. And if ever you change your mind, and if ever you take a step back in my direction, I want you to know I'm already moving in yours. And at the right time in human history, God wanted us so much to know that he was moving in our direction that he sent Jesus into the world. He wanted all of humanity to recognize he's moving towards us, not away from us. And so he sent Jesus into the world, and Jesus is God in the flesh. And he showed us what God is like. He wanted to show us how much God is with us. And so in the ultimate expression of love, he allowed himself to be put to death. His body was laid in a tomb. And according to multiple eyewitness accounts, he rose from the dead. And what that means is death is not the end. There's more to this life than this life. And you and I have been invited to be a part of God's family forever and ever. And that's not something you can behave your way into. That's something that you've been invited to. And so if you're here today and you'd say, man, I want to take a step in God's direction. I want to move towards God. God's already moving towards you. If you'd like to say yes to being a part of God's family, you can just agree right in your seat with this simple prayer. It goes like this. Jesus, please forgive my sins. Forgive me for those times where I've walked away from you. Thank you that you never walked away from me. Adopt me into your family. Make me your son. Make me your daughter. And help me as best as I know how to follow your way of living life. I commit myself to following you in Jesus' name. Amen. And if you're here today and you said, man, that's me. That's my next step. The scriptures tell us that anyone who says yes to that invitation is automatically, instantly made a part of God's family, and we celebrate that every week here at Westbridge.